Good morning. Our first case this morning is United States against Flores. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Efron, honorable members of this court. May it please the court, I'm Captain Andrew Unsicker. Along with Colonel Eric Eklund, we represent the appellant in this case, Sergeant Flores. In this case, trial counsel improperly commented on appellant's constitutional right to remain silent, thus depriving appellant of the right to a fair trial. I'd like to give a roadmap of where I'd like to go with this, Your Honors. I want to start off talking about the error that the military judge made, and then talk about why these comments were error, and talk about why appellant was prejudiced in this case, and the standard review that's involved. Although military judges are presumed to know the law, the military judge in this case should not be afforded that presumption. Because despite defense's numerous objections, he allowed trial counsel to impermissibly comment on appellant's constitutional right to remain silent.
Just to be clear, there were how many objections in this case?
Two, Your Honor.
And five statements. Are you arguing that the two objections cover the five statements, or are you arguing that the two cover the two and the others are plain error?
Appellants argue that the two cover all five statements.
Because the objection after the first statement, you would agree that the first objection occurred after the second statement.
Correct, yes, Your Honor.
But somehow it reaches backwards and reaches the first statement?
Yes, Your Honor. And the argument, if I may, for that is that this is the findings argument as a whole. This is different than different separate cross-examinations or direct examinations when the objections would be more specific to that. The fact of this case is that trial counsel or defense counsel objected twice in this closing argument. And it begs the question of what point the...
And twice should have been enough in your view.
Correct, yes, Your Honor.
Put the judge on notice for all the statements.
Correct, Your Honor. As far as the de novo standard review, yes, Your Honor. The standard for military judges is that they're presumed to know the law and follow it accordingly unless there is clear evidence to the contrary. And if you believe that these comments were error on the part of trial counsel, that would be appellant's argument that this was the evidence to the contrary. That
evidence to what? That the judge was ignorant?
I don't know if I'd use the word ignorant.
Well, what word would you use?
That the judge incorrectly understood the law or applied the law in this case.
Or you had three statements that weren't there. Or could the judge have simply said, well, he only objected twice. There were three other statements, and I didn't hear a peep out of him.
Correct, Your Honor.
He could have thought that?
I'm sorry, can you rephrase that question?
Okay. To follow up on Judge Baker, you're trying to pull the two objections to cover the five statements.
Correct, yes, Your Honor.
Could the judge not have thought, well, statement one, three, and five, the unobjected two ones, could the judge not have thought, well, I hear no objection, therefore I'll let it go?
No, I believe the judge was on notice at that point once trial counsel or defense counsel.
On notice of what? That there was a problem or what?
That there was a problem, yes, Your Honor.
Well, but what were the contours of the problem?
The contours of the problem, Your Honor, was that trial counsel was commenting on the defendant's right to remain silent, and it was continuing to do that. In respect to how she went about it, it was almost as she was bolstering the credibility of this Airman B's testimony by arguing you don't have anything from the appellant at this point. The appellant's argument would be that the military judge was on notice at that point that this was an issue.
Well, if you pick these statements apart, don't some appear more objectionable than others?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, I would agree.
I mean, some of them might even fall into the category of not really commenting, couldn't they?
Potentially, there's that argument there, Your Honor, but when you have that second objection and what the trial counsel's response to the judge was, she specifically said, I'm relating this back to the defendant's plea inquiry, which appellant's argument is that on the face, these all would relate to her right to remain silent. All these comments would. Yes, Your Honor. And again, we can't get inside the military judge's head and understand what he was thinking, but what we have is clues, and we can infer that the military judge improperly applied the law in this case. all we had to rely on this case, as far as what appellant was found guilty, was Airman B's testimony, and that's based on the military judge's special findings of fact.
Well, don't you have the pictures as well?
We do have the pictures.
Doesn't that reflect a fraternization of some degree?
Potentially it could, but it certainly doesn't rise to the level of the appellant having sex with one of the detainees or hugging one of the detainees or kissing one of the detainees, which was the judge's special findings in that case, Your Honor.
But that wasn't the charge, was it? Wasn't it just fraternization? Or?
It was, Your Honor. It was fraternization with detainee H, and the second one was a detainee S. Yes, Your Honor.
But you asked for special findings.
Correct, during trial.
Okay.
Appellant has to believe that this argument the trial counsel made had an effect on military judge in his decision to find appellant guilty. Now, it's black letter law that trial counsel cannot comment on appellant's right to remain silent, can't even make an inferential comment on the defendant's right to remain silent. Again, what happened here is trial counsel replied on what appellant did not provide to the military judge in an effort to bolster Airman B's credibility and have the judge believe everything that Airman B was testifying to. In some of these instances, trial counsel directly commented on appellant's silence, and others, again, she just bolstered Airman B's credibility. And if we just run...
Isn't there a difference between the two? Isn't there a difference between direct comment and bolstering a witness's credibility?
There could be, Your Honor.
Isn't there a difference of constitutional dimension?
Correct.
Okay. Yes, so where are we?
Well, in this case, she used that silence to bolster her credibility. So all of these are in constitutional dimension. They all relate to appellant's right to remain silent. If we look at the first statement, again, the trial counsel relates back to appellant's care inquiry, which is improper to do. I mean, we can use the guilty plea and the care inquiry to prove up a lesser included offense, but not separate offenses. She gives up her right to self-incrimination with respect to what she pled guilty to. And that was the error that the Air Force Court found error with, but held it harmless. Now, the second comment was in the context of that there was potentially other pictures out there that Airman B had testified to. There was other pictures that were known. Trial counsel went ahead and said that didn't come out of appellant's mouth. Again, that's a direct comment on appellant's right to remain silent in this case. And that one was objected to at that point, and that's at the point that the trial counsel said she was referring back to the care inquiry when she was talking about that.
So is the error in that instance simply the comment on the right to remain silence, or is it also an error in terms of commenting by using information that was derived from the guilty plea inquiry?
Both. Yes, Your Honor.
Is it apparent from the decision of the Court of Criminal Appeals why they found the first comment on the guilty plea inquiry to be an error and the second one not?
They did do a footnote on the second comment and said it gave them pause. The Air Force Court did refer to that. I don't know if it was a grammatical error, but they referred to that as a sentencing argument. Maybe in the context of a sentencing argument, that might not be error, but this was during findings argument. Third comment, again, trial counsel says you still don't have a set story from the appellant. Again, making the comparison between the appellant and Airman B. Goes on to make a fourth comment, whose testimony in this courtroom is corroborated and whose isn't. Again, the fact that appellant didn't testify in this case should not be held against her.
Is commenting on corroboration a comment on the right to remain silent?
Well, in this respect, the appellant in this case was the only one who could have contradicted the allegations in the court.
Well, I'm aware of that, but is comment on corroboration or the lack thereof an impermissible comment on silence?
Yes, Your Honor, because
do you have any case law to bolster that?
I do. I believe it's the Carter United States versus Carter, Your Honor. But I'm not positive. I can supplement that, Your Honor.
As I understand the government's argument and the point of the Court of Criminal Appeals, at least to the last three, the last two points that you raise, that the Court of Criminal Appeals and the government have seen those comments by the trial counsel as referring to statements that Sergeant Flores made that were placed into evidence, as opposed to commenting on her right to remain silent or the fact that she didn't say anything further. How would you address that?
Correct, Your Honor. They did refer to that. That was Prosecution Exhibit 9. Appellant's response to that is, again, based on that second objection that was made, the trial counsel specifically said, I'm referring back to the Karen query. She was talking about testimony there in trial.
Certainly, I think that comment was only made with respect to the second point that you're making, not to the fourth and fifth points.
Correct, Your Honor. And again, we don't know for sure what she was referring to specifically, if it was going to that statement, Your Honor.
So if there's an ambiguity there, and it could be read, at least as to those two items, as referring to statements that Sergeant Flores made, why can't we presume in that instance, if not the others, that the judge knew and understood the law?
Because of the judge's special findings, when he found the appellant guilty of having sex with one of the detainees, that as being part of the fraternization, that she hugged one of them, that she kissed one of them, goes to show that he was referring, what in his mind, he was basing it off the testimony of Airman B, the in-court statements rather than the out-of-court statements that appellant had previously made, Your Honor.
Well, that sounds to me like a prejudice argument rather than an argument that it was error.
Certainly, but again, as far as whether or not this was obvious error, appellant would make the argument that it happened five times. Appellant objected to it twice.
I'm just referring to the fourth and fifth items where the trial counsel said there's nothing that corroborates anything in terms of what Sergeant Florence has stated and later said go back and weigh heavily the testimony. In both of those cases, the Court of Criminal Appeals and the government has argued that those are referring to statements that Sergeant Flores made as opposed to referring to her right to remain silent. And I'm trying to figure out what your response is to that argument, not your response to the other issues in the case.
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to comments 4 and 5, the appellant disagrees. Those refer to the in-court statements that she was referring to, because trial counsel specifically says whose testimony in this courtroom is supported and whose isn't. That was the fourth comment that was made, so that would appear to be relating to what's going on during the trial. The testimony that the appellant gave with respect to her care inquiry.
Can I ask you a question about prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor.
Please state again what you think the standard is we should be evaluating.
It would be a de novo for all five comments, even if...
And what are we looking for? We're trying to figure out.
Well, if that's the case, we would look at the whole findings argument together.
To determine if what?
Determine if this was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
And might have contributed to the verdict in light of everything else that was presented?
Correct.
Do you agree that's the correct standard by which we should evaluate this?
Correct, yes, Your Honor.
And in light of Judge Erdman's question, are we evaluating this against the charge or the special findings?
You'd have to evaluate it against the special findings, Your Honor. That, in this case, is what makes this case, the fact that the judge made those special findings and specifically found her guilty of the things that the only testimony for was from Airman B in this case.
Only testimony other than whatever inferences could be drawn from the pictures.
Correct. Correct, yes, Your Honor. Helen would agree with that.
And there we have the both the picture in the possession of the detainee and the other pictures on the cameras. Would you agree with that? That's what's on the table.
Yes, Your Honor. Those pictures came in as separate evidence, so we can't argue with that. But again, the appellant doesn't believe that would go to show that she had sex with one of these detainees or hugged one of these detainees or kissed one of the detainees.
As opposed to fraternization.
Correct, yes, Your Honor.
Let me go into that a little bit further. In the special findings, the judge made six in regard to the fraternization with Assam, and several of those don't appear to be totally related to the testimony of Sergeant B, or whatever she is. So if we were to take your argument that that was improper for the judge to be considering those and throw them out, don't we still have some findings in there that are supported by other evidence?
Yes, there are, Your Honor. But again, looking this from a de novo view, that we look at all these comments together as one impermissible comment on appellant's right to remain silent. And again, based on the military judge's finding that the specific ones in there about sex would seem to, again, show that the military judge didn't understand or misapplied the law in this case, this making it incredibly confusing as to what exactly he believed at trial and what she should be found guilty of.
But it sounded like you disagreed that paragraphs 3, 4, and 5, or let me restate that, 1, 2, and 6 were not prejudicial, but 3, 4, and 5 were in the special findings.
Well, even if we were to believe that, Your Honor, I mean, in the end, would that be enough to lead to fraternization in this case? I don't know. And an appellant's argument is that it would not lead to prove up the charge, those findings.
I understand.
You'll have a further opportunity on rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I am Captain Charles Warren, along with Colonel Don Christensen. We represent the United States in this matter. Your Honors, the military judge did not commit plain error in failing to object sua sponte to isolated portions of the trial counsel's findings argument, which Appellant now finds objectionable for the first time on appeal. Furthermore, as to those comments which were objected to, any error in referring to statements made by the appellant during her guilty plea inquiry were harmless in this case, given the independently admissible evidence of the same form, of the same substance, rather, in a different form, that being in the form of Prosecution Exhibit 9. Your Honors, turning first to the applicable standard of review in this case, the government's position is that all those statements to which appellant voiced no objection at trial are subject to plain air review here on appeal. There is no categorical reservation of a basis for objection with a 2-for-5 type ratio that appellant would have us apply in this case. Under this Court's precedence in United States versus Riley and under the plain reading of Rules for Court Martial 919A, any argument which passes without objection is waived absent plain error on appeal. Your Honors, in evaluating the one statement which the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals found to be an error below, that being, well, that was corroborated by defendant, appellant. She corroborated that in court in front of you, Your Honor. That statement was not being attempted to use by the government for a substantive purpose. That is, as proof of a separate offense. That was, at worst, the bolstering of the credibility of another government witness and the implications of MRE 410, which say, do not offer evidence of unrelated misconduct as proof in a mixed pleas case, are not directly at issue in a credibility versus substantive type scenario that we have going on here. Rather,
so what part of Rule 410 says that can be admitted for impeachment purposes or to bolster credibility?
Well, Your Honor, MRE 410 is silent as to admission for credibility purposes, but in this Court's decision in United States versus Rivera, cited by appellant as a supplemental citation of authority, I believe it was the Court of Military Appeals 1986, the Court held that evidence of that came out during a guilty plea could be used for 404B purposes for unrelated misconduct.
So when the judge told the appellant during the plea bargain that the statement she made could only be used against her for the purpose of the plea, what he really meant was, and for any corroboration the government might wish to use them for at the same time, but I'm not going to tell you that?
Your Honor, admittedly, in light of Rivera, the military judge's instructions to the appellant could be more plain on this issue. The point
more plain, like they can be used against you as corroboration?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be more plain. But the government's point that we seek to make in this issue is that this is not the core harm that MRE 410 is concerned with, which is the specific substance of use.
Are you arguing gradations, or are you trying to argue it was an error?
Your Honor, in this case,
putting aside whether it's plain obvious and all that other stuff, but are you as the government today trying to say this is entirely appropriate to use admissions during guilty pleas where the judge says this can only be used against you for the guilty plea?
Your Honor, in this case,
error or no error?
Your Honor, in this case, the government would say that there was no error in this case since it was not offered substantively for an unrelated offense. If this court would nonetheless disagree and find there to be error, there would still be no prejudice in this case because the exact form of that evidence from the guilty plea was subsumed in independently admissible evidence already before the military judge in the guise of Prosecution Exhibit 9, as well as a testimony from Staff Sergeant Stevenson, who testified about the statements that appellant made to her orally during the course of the investigation. So what we have here is not a situation where evidence from the guilty plea is bringing in separate evidence that was not admissible before the military judge. We have a difference in form only, not of substance. And in this judge alone case, there is no evidence before this court that would indicate that the military judge wholly abandoned his role as an impartial and learned decision maker and is not entitled to that presumption that he knew the law, applied it correctly, and would not apply substantively evidence of a guilty plea for unrelated misconduct.
Counsel, with respect to the second statement that was made, if the first statement came in error because it was derived from the information obtained in the guilty plea inquiry, wouldn't that also apply to the second statement as well, where the military judge specifically asked trial counsel what his intent was, and he said the intent was to comment on what Sergeant Flores told you in the court during her guilty plea? I'm not asking you to concede that that is also error since you haven't conceded first, but if the first is error, doesn't the same logic apply to the second?
Yes, Your Honor, the same logic would apply to
you.
The second. And just to clarify, Your Honor, the statement you're referring to, is that information did not come from the appellant's mouth?
Right.
Yes, Your Honor. And in that circumstance, Your Honor, the same substance in terms of the prejudice inquiry would also go to that point, however, that those words that not come from the appellant's mouth, that's also true to the statements, the false exculpatory statements and the inculpatory statements that the appellant made during her 2 July and 11 July 2007 interviews with security forces in that case. It's the same substance of the statements that were eventually admitted by appellant in her guilty plea. All of those were independently admissible to the military judge through those prior statements and directly before the military judge because a false official statement charge and two specifications were on the charge sheet, so the military judge would naturally have considered the entirety of Prosecution Exhibit 9 in deciding whether the charges in that respect were factually
in the with respect to comment 3, why isn't that a reference to the appellant not testifying in court since the references to her statements? And then the government contends you still don't have a set story from Sergeant Flores. Well, you still don't. The only forum in which she could provide a set story would be testifying in trial, would it not? Or was she supposed to go down to the local CID office or whatever, OSI office, and make another statement to make the thing consistent?
Your Honor, I'm sorry, Your Honor, did I interrupt you?
No.
Okay. Your Honor, in respect to that, the government would respectfully submit that in construing those statements, that was more of an inartful jab at the continuing insufficiency of appellant's pretrial statements. The fact is that in her pretrial statements from 2 and 11 July, that she did not tell the entire truth about those misconduct that she was involved in, and that was demonstrated by the witnesses who testified at trial. Trial counsel's comments were more properly directed to what was untrue then remains untrue today. You still don't have a set story. That's an evaluation of the incompleteness of the initial statement in the first sentence. It could have been, should have been articulated more clearly by the trial counsel, but again, in this military judge alone trial, as this court has continually recognized, the threat of prejudice is precipitously lower when the military judge is presumed to know the law and apply it correctly.
Okay, so what do we do in a judge alone trial where the judge, at least according to the appellant, seems to have gone off the tracks? I mean, what's the quantum we've got to have to overcome that proposition?
Well, Your Honor, here in this case, addressing briefly the appellant's position that, well, we can't know what's in the mind of the military judge, which is essentially what this court would want to know in overcoming that presumption. Here we do know to an extent what was in the mind of the military judge. We have his special findings on the charges at issue.
And who asked for the special findings?
The government asked for the special findings.
The government asked for the special findings. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. And in that respect, the military judge's articulation of those specific facts that he relied upon in finding her guilty of specifications 3 and 4, none of those reference any of the guilty plea statements that trial counsel inarticulately referred to during the closing argument. So it's not a manner of us having to even rely upon that presumption that the military judge knows the law and applies it correctly. Here we have affirmative evidence that the military judge knew the law and applied it correctly, because each of the facts that he relies upon is independently admissible, separate and apart from appellant's guilty plea statements, not tainted by any of the appellant's guilty plea statements. This was independent knowledge that A1C Barlow had. A1C Barlow was not sitting in the courtroom during the guilty plea statement. She was not parroting back things that the accused said during her guilty plea statement. She was relying upon her independent recollections, and the military judge was entirely justified in relying upon her testimony and arriving at his findings in this case.
Counsel, that's good.
Counsel, if a military judge misapplies the law during a trial,
yes, Your Honor,
and then makes further rulings in the same area, are we to continue to apply the presumption that he knows the law?
Well, Your Honor, in this,
I mean, that's just a question without reference to this case.
Well, Your Honor, we would respectfully say that that is a situation that's different from this case. In the hypo that you propose, if this court found significant constitutional error by the military judge on numerous occasions, then the court may well be justified in backing away from the presumption that the military judge knows the law and applies it correctly. But the errors alleged in this case and the military judge's misuse of any argument in this case does not rise to that level where the court needs to divest the military judge of the presumption that he knew the law and applied it correctly. The bottom line in this case is, Your Honor, that there is no indication on the record from the military judge that he intended to substantively consider the guilty plea statements for non-related offenses, and then in the special findings entered by the military judge, indicate that he did not, in fact, consider. So even assuming arguendo that there was the invitation by the trial counsel that the military judge consider the guilty plea statements for unrelated misconduct, there's no evidence that the military judge did so.
Well, let me just make sure I understand your position. So if a military judge just makes a complete wrong ruling, misinterpreting the law, we still then apply the presumption that he knows the law and applies it correctly the next time he's faced with that situation?
Well, Your Honor, and we would say that, you know, perhaps the presumption would differ varying upon subject matter. I mean, I doubt that the court would want to withdraw all deference to the military judge on all issues just depending upon an isolated instance where the military judge may have committed.
Well, let's say the exact same issue.
The exact same issue.
Well, are we then to presume that he has corrected himself and he now knows what the law is?
Well,
I mean, my question is, shouldn't we take that into consideration when we're looking at that presumption?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, the court should take into consideration all activities by the military judge during the trial, particularly his articulation of his reasonings and his rulings. And in consideration of that, the government would respectfully offer that even more powerful than the brief colloquy between the military judge and trial counsel on the record is his detailed articulation of his special findings in this case that this court can and should rely upon in ascertaining whether the military judge abandoned all knowledge of the appellant's rights to not have her right against self-incrimination held against her.
What evidence did the government offer with regard to the sex aspect of the fraternization? Is that from Airman Barlow?
Yes, Your Honor. That's from Aaron Barlow.
And whatever inferences can be drawn from the photographs?
Yes, Your Honor, those as well.
And making sure I understand what's on the table.
Yes, Your Honor, as well as there's other circumstantial evidence that helps support Aaron Barlow's recitation of the facts. There's Tech Sergeant Holtzman, who was the quad leader that testifies as to her interactions with detainee H and her job to frequently interact with him and her notice and his noticing of familiarity and her frequent loitering in and about that area. So all those things, which don't independently themselves establish sex, would go to corroborate Aaron Barlow's descriptions of the familiarity and her knowledge of the sexual relationship based upon the disclosures. Now, Your Honors, turning to the next statement under consideration here, the go back and weigh what evidence supports Aaron Barlow and what evidence that supports the accused. Again, that was not an invitation for the military judge to evaluate the fact that the accused had not testified in the litigated portion of the case. That was an invitation to evaluate the false exculpatory statements and inculpatory statements previously made by the accused on the record, which were subject to full consideration after the accused made them, and compare that to A1C Barlow's testimony.
Would you address prejudice generally? Is it the government's position that the two objected to statements are HBRD if error, and that the other three are not plain error?
Yes, Your Honor, that is our position.
Was there error in the two objected to statements?
Your Honor, with the Air Force Corps below found that the
they found error on one, didn't they?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
You still don't have a set story from the defendant, no, Your Honor, from appellant, no, Your Honor. There was no error there.
They found no error.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And
so are you arguing that number one statement was HBRD?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you arguing that number two statement was not error?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that the other three are plain error?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
And that the appellant has not carried his burden of establishing.
Right. But that the other three are to be tested by plain error.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, if we were to assume that all of the comments constituted error, is that enough to raise this to a cumulative error analysis?
Your Honor, respectfully, the government would say no. The five comments that were relayed here were in the course of a total of 23 pages of trial counsel argument, 18 pages on the opening findings argument and 5 pages on rebuttal. The theme of the government's case was a reliance upon not guilty plea statements made during the guilty plea of the appellant, but upon the evidence presented at trial by the government. A1C Barlow's testimony, Staff Sergeant Stevenson's testimony, indeed, the appellant's own statements in her Prosecution Exhibit 9 that were offered on the record, Tech Sergeant Holtzman testifying to her familiarity with the detainees. The focus was on what evidence the government put forward, not what evidence the accused did not put forward. This was...
Wait, hang on.
Yes, Your Honor.
Whose testimony in this courtroom is supported and whose isn't? Isn't that a reference to what the defense failed to do?
Your Honor, that is, again...
The comment you just made?
Your Honor, again, the government, in light of the entire context of the closing argument, interprets that as inviting the military judge to compare what evidence in court supported A1C Barlow's testimony and what evidence supported the appellant's prior to trial statement.
So this was another inartful statement regarding what the trial counsel actually meant to say.
So yes, Your Honor.
Should disregard the words and infer instead what she meant to say.
Well, Your Honor, the government doesn't think it's a far reach to interpret trial counsel's statements as looking at the admissible statement that was before the court. The fact is that Prosecution Exhibit 9 was before the court for the purposes of false official statement and to support the charges that the appellant pled not guilty to.
I distracted you from Judge Urban's question, but since you said it directly, I couldn't help but to note that the sentence there is contradicts precisely what you said with respect to comment 4, unless you interpret it to mean something else.
And the precise sentence, yes, Your Honor.
If you can figure out where you were.
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Urban,
let me restate my question.
Yes, sir.
I mean, if we were just assuming we were to say that these five comments did constitute improper comment on the right to remain silent, I mean, obviously there's some cumulative effect there. I mean, you can't deny that. I mean, you can argue that it's not great or whatever it is, but obviously if each one individually is an error, if you have five, then there is a cumulative error. And what is your best argument from a prejudice perspective that that cumulative error is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the government would distinguish between what type of error we're talking about here. Are we talking about constitutional Fifth Amendment error? Are we talking about
If it was an improper comment on her right to remain silent, I think we're talking about a constitutional error.
Well, and that's where, Your Honor, the government would respectfully take issue that that's not what we're talking about with all five of these statements. That two of those statements specifically could only be referring to statements that she made during the guilty plea, while the government fully understands that.
Well, I understand your argument there, but let's assume all five are constitutional errors for purposes of this question.
Yes, Your Honor. If the court concedes that considers that all five rise to the level of constitutional error, then we would rely upon this court's precedent in United States versus Moran, that were independently admissible evidence was before the court that covered the same substance of these types of comments, that the error was still harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, because the military judge in this case, as the fact finder, could rely upon the same substantive evidence that the trial counsel was referring to in a permissible form, which is her prior to trial statements, which subsumed her guilty plea statements that the trial counsel was referring to in this case.
And are you going beyond that to the other independent evidence that was introduced, or are you just going on her prior statements?
In what respect, Your Honor?
Well, you're saying that I guess you're trying to diminish the error by saying that she had made prior statements that were admissible before the judge. That
yes,
diminished the magnitude of the error.
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you making an argument that the testimony of the other witnesses fully established these crimes and it was harmless because of that?
Well, Your Honor, the testimony of the other witnesses, there's nothing to diminish the reliability of A1C Barlow's testimony because trial counsel may have impermissibly commented upon the accused guilty plea statements. That does not in any way diminish her independent knowledge of this or the admissibility of her statements, and the military judge would have been fully justified in relying upon A1C Barlow's statements. There's no the additional corroboration required for A1C Barlow's statements was established through Tech Sergeant Holtzman and Staff Sergeant Stevenson.
Normally in these cases, the government comes in and argues that even if there was error, even if all of these statements were improper and they were constitutional error, the evidence is so overwhelming that it would not have affected the outcome. And you're not making that argument based on what you just said.
Well, and your argument, Your Honor, I'm sorry, I see that my time has expired now.
You can answer the question, and then you'll have an opportunity to briefly conclude, unless there are other questions as well.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, to make clear, and I apologize if I've been inarticulate in this, it is the government's position that A1C Barlow's testimony combined with the additional evidence was overwhelming in this case. A1C Barlow's testimony was corroborated in factual particulars by the other witnesses, government witnesses that testified at trial, and by the appellant's prior to trial false exculpatory and inculpatory statements. In light of this overwhelming evidence, any reference to guilty plea statements that were already subsumed within her prior trial statements would have been harmless in this case. Your Honor, in conclusion, the three statements which were not objected to by the appellant trial did not rise to the level of plain error in this case, and any error that might have occurred by trial counsel's inadvertent mentioning of statements of the accused made during her guilty plea inquiry were harmless beyond a reasonable doubt in light of the strength of the government's case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
If I could, Your Honor, I would just like to address the aspect of military judge alone in this case. The government placed a lot of emphasis that this was a military judge alone case. And if this court was to believe that all these comments were error, appellant doesn't have any bright line rule that this court should come to of what point the military judges loses that presumption of knowing law, but would argue that in this case, that the military judge missed this five times would be enough to show that the military judge loses that presumption, that this is evidence contrary to that presumption.
What about the presumption that the judge would know the difference between evidence and argument?
Certainly, Your Honor. And again, it comes down to the issue that...
The judge may not know the Fifth Amendment, but the judge may be presumed to know the difference between evidence and argument. That's my question.
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. If the judge does know that, if we presume that the judge knows the difference between that, still, the argument aspect of this is when the counsel are tying all the facts, all the evidence together, and giving that to the military judge. There must be some importance to the argument. Otherwise, I don't understand why we would have the argument. So it must have had some effect on the military judge's decision, Your Honor. And again, as I said, that we don't have any way to get into the military judge's mind, but we do have clues to infer that the military judge should lose that presumption. If there's no more questions, if I could briefly conclude, Your Honor. In this case, trial counsel improperly commented on appellant's right to remain silent, and the military judge improperly allowed it. Accordingly, appellant respectfully requests this court set aside the decision of the United States Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 10:20 a.m.
All rise. The court stands in recess until 10:20.